Doug Christie. He's a 15-year NBA veteran. Jason Ross. He's not. It's Doug Christie and Jason Ross on Sports 1140 KHTK.
All right, here we go. Final half hour of the show. Again, game night coming your way at the bottom of the hour. We do have Kings basketball tonight. Kings and the Clippers from L.A. They had the long homestand. They go to L.A. for one. Then they're back here Friday at home for the New York Knicks. But it is Kings and Clippers. We'll have it for you here on Sports 1140. But it's that time of the day, top of the hour at 5 o'clock. Doug, you ready for some five on it?
On it.
On it. Let's do it.
I got five on it. I got five. A look at the top five at five. A spin around the nation to hear five stories. Five people, five opinions. This is I Got Five on It.
All right, today on Five on It, a couple of topics here we're going to bounce around. We're going to check in what's going on with the Detroit Lions as they've got their new coach. Check in on the Houston Astros, who lost out on George Springer. We'll tell you where he's going, which is Toronto. We'll check in there. We got UC Davis basketball returning. We'll hear from Charles Barkley and so much more coming up here on Five on It. You ready to do it?
Come on, man.
All right. Let's.
You know what sugar-free say?
Yes, I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
What did he say?
He said, I like sugar.
No,
he said if you are.
Come on. Come on, man. How many times
I don't have to get ready.
No, that ain't it.
I stay ready.
Oh, if you stay ready,
yeah,
you ain't got to get ready.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I thought you said you had it.
That was a version of it.
Okay. Well, that would be the salt version. We're talking about the sugar-free version, okay?
All right, let's do it. Here we go. Let's check in what's going on in Toronto. Caitlin McGrath, staff writer for The Athletic there in Toronto, joining us. Caitlin, let's start with the news there for the Blue Jays getting George Springer, a huge get there. How long had this been in the works?
Oh, well, you know, since the offseason started, the Blue Jays has been a team that said they really wanted to, you know, make an impact this offseason, sign like an elite star who would basically raise the ceiling of their team, make a young team, you know, a lot more competitive. And so they have been setting their sights really high. And George Springer was just a really perfect fit for the Blue Jays just because, you know, they're a team that was looking for an elite center fielder. He has a great bat. He fits into their lineup really perfectly. And he's just that experienced player, has playoff experience that will really help their team.
Caitlin, many times a player like George Springer comes along to a young team and there are beneficiaries from what he brings, whether it's Vlad Guillermo or who do you think as you look and see the roster might benefit the most out of a World Series champion coming over?
Yeah, I think there's probably a lot of players that could benefit from some of Springer's expertise and his experience. Kevin DiGio is someone who also is very, you know, interested in baseball. Obviously, his dad was a baseball player. The Blue Jays have a few players whose dads were baseball players. There's just a lot of young guys. And I think, honestly, like, everyone on the Blue Jays team can benefit from, you know, learning from Springer. Last year, the Blue Jays made the playoffs, and most of the team, it was their first time in the Major League playoffs. So just having a guy that has that experience, I think, is really going to benefit the Blue Jays.
Where do you feel, I mean, they've been pretty good the last couple of years, pretty competitive, but in that American League East, when you have what the Rays have done, certainly the Yankees, Red Sox are off and on here and there, how do they fit in amongst that pretty talented division?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a little bit of offseason to go here, so let's see what the Blue Jays, who else they add, potentially. I think they look like a team that still needs probably a front-of-the-rotation starter, like maybe a number two starter. But I think that they're a much better team than they were last year. Springer alone is going to make them a better team. They're still a pretty young team, like I said. A lot of players are just in their going to be in their second or third years in the major league. So they're still kind of learning, getting used to the major leagues. There's still going to be a lot of internal improvement that's needed. So I'm not sure that they are an immediate World Series contender. I think they need a few more pieces, a few more experience, but I do think they're a playoff contender. I do think their lineup with another piece or so could really be dangerous, especially against a team like the Yankees and the Rays. I really think they can stack up against them.
Caitlin, we've saw now the Raptors head down to Florida. As you mentioned, there is some time before the season starts, and you're going to have spring training. If the season was to start and we're still dealing with COVID and border issues, how do you see that playing out for the Blue Jays?
Yeah, I mean, the Blue Jays obviously were in a really strange position last year as a team that was not playing at their home ballpark. They spent the season in Buffalo, which is the site of their minor league ballpark. They made do, and obviously they missed being in Toronto, but it wasn't possible last year. I think the situation is a little different this year because I think there's probably a chance that they maybe could play in Canada if, like you said, you know, COVID looks a lot different when the season starts. I'm not sure if that's possible. I think the Blue Jays hope that they can be in Toronto maybe at some point, maybe later in the season, in the summertime, if things are more under control, they could return to Toronto. In the short term, a place like Dunedin, Florida, where they have their spring training facility, looks like a really good alternative. They can spend time, or they can spend their spring training getting ready there, and then they could just stay there, start the season there in Florida, where they would play the other teams. And they've just recently had that facility renovated, so it is in pretty good shape for them. And then they sort of start the season there and see how things progress with COVID, with the vaccine, and whether or not they can move to Toronto maybe mid-season.
All right, Caitlin, we appreciate that, getting some perspective on what's going on there in Toronto. Let's move on Five on It. Let's check in with Charles Barkley. Reaction here, and kind of a topic we talked about earlier, Doug, about athletes and getting the vaccine. Charles Barkley here addresses that, and he thinks athletes should get priority.
We need 300 million shots. I've given 1,000 to some NBA players.
What about NFL?
NFL, I'm just going to raise it. NFL players, hockey players. Listen, as much taxes as these players pay, let me repeat that. As much taxes as these players pay, they deserve some preferential treatment.
For life and death?
Yes.
The amount of money you make.
I said taxes.
Well, that's better. That's on taxes.
I'm saying the amount of taxes these guys pay.
We can't go there.
Yeah.
He did.
And we hadn't heard that sound. Jay told us what we were playing. I was surprised that it went. I thought it was going to be for a different reason. Because I'm not even sure I disagree with Charles in the fact that maybe, not that there should be priority, but I like the example. There's influencers there, and some people I don't think are going to want to take a vaccine. So if an athlete, an actor, a political leader is on TV, is on camera, is saying, hey, here's the benefits, that could impact people. But I don't think it's because of the amount of taxes they get hit with. That's not why I would think so.
Yeah. It's
And they get other perks.
Yes, it is going to be. It's going to be delicate. There's going to be criticism regardless how you go. Part of it also is sports. I think we're realizing how big it is to our economies and jobs and different things. Now, I think that there is going to be a ladder when we start going through this on. Well, let me take that back. I have no idea if there's going to be a damn ladder we've never been through this before. So the ability to figure out who's going to get it first and how it goes, I think some of it may be taken into consideration because if, for instance, if these guys were vaccinated and there was no problems, could then we start seeing people come in, which then adds more job. That's where I think, I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah.
But Charles's example, I don't necessarily agree with.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard, you know, there's a lot of people are talking about this and what's the best way. And that's the thing. There's not, hey, this is the path. This is how it's all going to work. We're all still learning on this because it makes to me a lot of sense, Doug, to start with maybe the most potentially impacted. And that's generally the elderly.
Uh-huh.
Okay, there's some credence to that. I've even heard another counter, though. You know who really should get this is the young people, because a lot of times they're the ones that are out and they're the ones that may be spreading this. I'm like, well, I didn't think of it that way. I mean, so you can kind of find an angle and make your best
case
argument.
Or we could just get enough for everybody.
Well, hope that's the ultimate goal.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just not all sitting on the corner.
It's difficult. And you mentioned it right off the top, and we haven't really even got into that because we haven't necessarily seen it. I told you I seen the PSA for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I think it was. Some people ain't going to be about it.
Right. No matter what you say or whoever.
Yeah, they're
takes
just
it.
Like, you know what? No, I'm not doing it. And their in is going to lie the problem of, okay, well, that's good. Okay, it's okay because everyone has their own. But you can't work here.
Right.
Or you can't do this. Now what? What are you going to do? And
can't get on this flight. Can't attend this concert. Can't whatever.
And
go to this school.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
How far that goes, we don't know.
Yeah.
But we're going to know pretty soon.
Yeah. Yes. Charles is going to say something. You know that.
No doubt. Yeah. That's what I kind of appreciate about Charles.
Yeah.
He goes. Hey, I got the vibe. It's moving me.
All right, let's move on Five On It. Guy you're going to hear in about 20 minutes or so on game night. That's Scott Marsh. He's also the voice of UC Davis football and basketball. The Aggies are back, right, Scott? Can we say they're all the way back? Is there games this weekend?
We do have games scheduled Friday and Saturday, but as you know, Jason, until they're actually played, you know, it's kind of fingers crossed. But, yes, we are planning for Aggie hoops on Friday afternoon right here on KHDK.
Scott, take us, I guess, behind the curtain, if you've actually even been behind the curtain. And how are these young people dealing with this? How are they dealing with practice and different things? Have they been able to? What does that part of this thing look like for the Aggies?
Yeah, and you know, Doug, just like with you and with the Kings, it's impossible to get behind the curtain with the different tiers and not being allowed access. But, you know, in talking to Coach Les and the staff out there, I mean, it's been a tough run. And, you know, every college program is dealing with it. Having said that, I think UC Davis has even been in a very unique situation because of the situation with Yolo County. So when the state of California issued its regional orders, it didn't really suspend college basketball. Teams were still able to play throughout the state. Yolo County actually had a tougher mandate, much like Santa Clara did. So schools like UC Davis and Stanford, they were affected. They were not allowed to play games still. Stanford's remedy, well, they just simply moved out of the county. They started playing games in Santa Cruz. They didn't come back to campus. They did all their schooling from outside the county, so they were able to play. UC Davis elected not to try something similar. So to say that they've been unable to practice, I mean, really, it's been the case for about 5-6 weeks now. And, you know, for the students to get started, play 4 games, and then get shut down, thinking they're going to play again, and then get shut down again, having to follow all the COVID protocols just to be ready in case they could play again. I mean, it's been really tough on everybody.
And, Scott, obviously the goal for all college basketball teams is to get to March Madness, no matter how they do it. Aggies haven't played that many games. They've had league games interrupted. What is there a set number that they have to get in to even qualify?
Yeah, my understanding, Jason, all schools have to play 13 games in order to qualify for the NCAA tournament. And, of course, you know, there's over 360 Division I teams. They all split a portion of the NCAA big pie. If you don't get the 13 games, you don't get the revenue back because you didn't qualify for making the tournament. So UC Davis right now still has enough league games, assuming they happen from this point forward. They would also have a conference tournament to play in. They should get there. But as you know, every game is a blessing at this point. So they're just hoping they can add up enough games, keep everybody healthy and safe throughout the conference, along with themselves, to make it there.
When you talk about keeping everybody healthy, has there been any outbreaks, a rash of COVID or anything, either on the team or around the team?
You know, UC Davis, their athletic department, since the pandemic started in March, has not had one student athlete test positive. So that goes to show you how great UC Davis has been. And, of course, UC Davis as a medical institution has been on the worldwide front in fighting this pandemic. So there's a lot of resources this school has that they're very lucky to have right now.
Wow. So hopefully you're having basketball on Friday and Saturday, and certainly we're going to hear you soon here on game night. Thank you, Scott.
And hopefully, Jason, you get to the red zone there, buddy.
One thing to add real quickly, UC Davis, to add how they have to still fight the pandemic. They're playing UC San Diego on Friday. They're not allowed to fly, so they're busing down to San Diego for these games.
Hey,
through the grapevine.
But that's where everything happens. On the bus, man, you know.
Good trouble?
Oh, absolutely good trouble.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right. Man, bus rides.
What, you not down with the bus?
I am, actually. I'm a good traveler.
Yeah, are you?
Let's hit the road. Let's go.
You sleep?
No, I'm the driver.
Oh, you're the driver.
Well, maybe not the bus.
Okay. Yeah. That's the Slurpee and sunflower seeds.
There you go.
Yeah, that's nice.
Whatever it takes.
I keep you awake.
Yep. All right, let's move on Five On It. Let's check in Detroit. Will Birchfield, sports writer for 97.1, The Ticket in Detroit, joining us. Will, it looks like Dan Campbell is the answer as the next head coach for the Lions. How did we get here? What's the reasoning and rationale behind bringing in Dan Campbell?
Yeah, yeah. The rationale is that, at least on the surface, he is kind of the opposite of Matt Patricia. Matt Patricia came in here in 2018 and really lost this locker room on the first day of practice almost, and never recovered it through his next three seasons. And ultimately, that cost him, a lot of good players who he alienated, including Golden Tate, Darius Slay, Quandre Diggs. And it cost the team a lot of games. The players just weren't fully bought in with what he was selling. And so in Dan Campbell, they're getting a coach who comes with rave reviews from his former players, former teammates. Guys have said that he's someone you want to go to battle for. And I don't think the Lions ever, as a team, to a man, wanted to go to battle for Matt Patricia. I think they're hoping that with someone like Dan Campbell, that's a much different story.
Will, I'm intrigued. Maybe you can. I had a different question, but maybe this is the answer. Maybe it's not. But how did he lose it on day one? Was it something he said?
Yeah, I mean, look, he just didn't give the team the respect that I think they thought they deserved. There were teams that had won 9 games for 2 straight seasons, and he came in here and basically told them, "You're not any good, and you're certainly not good enough." And coming from a place like New England, it can feel easy to say that, but he hadn't built up, enough equity with those players to be making those kind of comments. And he tried to tear the whole thing down and rebuild it, and that's not what that team needed. And so a lot of players who had established themselves as stars felt disrespected. I think from that point on, he had a hard time gaining back their trust and respect.
So what do you think Dan Campbell needs? What else? What's missing from the Lions for them to be kind of in the mix next year?
Talent. they need a lot more talent. It starts right there. And they might need a new quarterback depending on what Brad Holmes, the new GM, decides to do with Matthew Stafford. That's still very much a question. If Brad Holmes decides that this thing is a full-on rebuild, then the first move is probably to trade Stafford. And there's plenty of teams out there, whether it's Indianapolis, whether it's Washington, whether it's possibly Pittsburgh, that could use Stafford. So that's the biggest question. But ultimately, it's a matter of bringing in more talent, especially on defense, where the Lions just gave up the most yards and the most points in their pretty ugly franchise history. So it starts there on defense, and then hopefully you have a resolution with Stafford entering next season.
Well, with Matthew Stafford there, you bring in a defensive coordinator for a head coach, and now you bring in a new head coach. Do you look at Matthew and say they haven't done right by him? From the outside looking in, I'm a Seahawks fan, but it looks like they haven't given him what he needs because the kid's got an arm, and I think he could play.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly fair. The Lions in Stafford's entire career here, which is now 13 years, have never had a rushing attack that ranks even in the top half of the league. So that's half of it. The other half is they've only had one top five defense in that span. So Stafford has been playing basically against his own team and against the opponent for the duration of his career here. And if you step back and kind of get the national perspective on things, you realize how talented this player is. It can be pretty easy to get bogged down locally and the lack of his success, the lack of the wins for him. But the talent, when you talk to opposing players, opposing coaches, is pretty close to, if not at the elite level. But they haven't done right by him, and they're now probably at least 2-3 years away from doing right by him again. So it seems like it might be the right time to move on and just start over at quarterback.
All right. Thank you, Will. We appreciate that. I'm still taken back by his first answer that Matt Patricia lost the locker room day one.
I looked at like, man, day one? But I, you know what?
Based on what he
his
said.
His answer was spot on. You can't come from there and think that you're like totally.
I know how to do this. You guys don't. It's my way.
Not so much. First, you got to prove that you're one of us.
Right.
I got a high school story about that I'll have to share with
okay.
you.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
On air or off air?
On air.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I got it for you.
Okay. Let's finish up a five on it with Chandler Rome, Astros beat reporter for the Houston Chronicle. Chandler, we know George Springer has been a huge, huge part of the Astros' success over the last several years. How do they fill that huge void?
Well, getting Michael Brantley back helps a little bit, but I don't think there's not a simple answer for how they're going to fill the void, because you can't. I mean, this is the greatest postseason player in Astros franchise history. He is probably the second best leadoff hitter ever in Astros history, behind only Craig Biggio. This was a guy, he was the first face of the new Astros, right? He was on the Sports Illustrated cover in 2014 when they predicted they were going to win the World Series in 2017. He was the first, you know, big prospect that fans wanted to come up to the big leagues, that they kind of thought that this was going to be different, that they could have something to look forward to after these 100 lost seasons in 2012 and 2013. So certainly was not a surprise that he left. You know, this is, I even wrote it today, it was a foregone conclusion, but certainly when it happens, it kind of hits fans a little bit different. So fans are upset, but I think they'll get over it.
When you look at this ball club, losing a player like Springer is huge, but you got Altuve and Correa, and you go down. Is that championship window still open, or is it closing or closed? How do you look at it?
Oh, did we lose Chandler?
Did we lose him?
We lost Chandler.
Okay.
Well, if it's closed, you know, I don't know that it's closed. You know, will help. Dusty did a good job.
Yes, he did.
Dusty did a really good job.
Agreed. He some of his interviews kind of spoke to, I think, how he was in the clubhouse, because he's like, you know, the COVID era, man, I mean, it's different. Like, I'm not spending my per diem. I got, like, all of a sudden, I got, like, a lot of money. Did you see that?
Yes.
That one? I was like, Dusty, you off the hook. But that's probably how he's dealing with the players, and they probably love Dusty.
Yeah.
No doubt.
But I know Jay brought this up, I think, maybe a week ago, just thinking about the fans of Houston sports teams. So now James Harden just left. You had Westbrook, Chris Paul, George Springer. You could, Deshaun Watson. I mean, man. Just some icons in that area that they're missing out on.
Yeah, no doubt. That's good. That's going to be a big one.
So I think we got Chandler back. You with us, Chandler?
I am. I don't know. Technology is a weird thing.
Oh, it's all good, Chandler. I was asking what you think about the window for this ball club. Open, closing, closed. How do you view it after losing a guy like Springer?
They're not a super team anymore. I don't think this is a team that's going to win 100 games. But it's, you know, they return Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, Carlos Correa, now Michael Brantley. Yordan Alvarez will be back for a full year this year, hopefully healthy. Kyle Tucker had a breakout year last year, former top prospect. So, I mean, those are seven established hitters that you return. They've got Zach Greinke atop the rotation. Framber Valdez was like a revolution last year as a member of their rotation, a guy that got Cy Young votes. You know, they've got Lance McCullers Jr. So the pieces are there. This is a team that's going to contend. As we sit today, you could make the argument that they're the best team in the American League West, given that the A's really haven't done much. So they're going to contend to win their division, but this is not a super team anymore. You know, the days of Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole heading the rotation and just kind of a deadly lineup like you saw in 2019, it's just not that team anymore.
Chandler, Doug, and I were just talking when we lost you in that brief little time about Dusty and his role, Dusty Baker. How important was he to kind of bridge the whole scandal into last season and ultimately get to the playoffs? What's Dusty's role been with this organization?
Well, it's kind of difficult to ascertain just because, you know, I wasn't allowed in the clubhouse. You can't really be around the guys as much, so you don't get a feel for that. But, I mean, honestly, like, they couldn't have hired a better manager in terms of crisis communication, in terms of crisis management. I mean, this guy's seen it all in the big leagues. You know, he certainly played a part, but you got to remember too that this team was talented. That this team coming back was talented, and in 2020 they, you know, I think the one thing that surprised Dusty and that surprised general manager James Click, you know, this team was really bad in the regular season. They were 29-31. They barely squeaked into the postseason, but they kept telling Dusty and they kept telling James Click, you know, we turn it on when the postseason comes. And I think both guys were really skeptical. They were like, oh, well, okay. And they kind of grinned and hoped. But, you know, it showed that they do. I mean, postseason experience matters. And this is a club that has a lot of it. Now, where you get into the real harm of losing George Springer is, you know, that's 63 postseason games. It's walking out the door. And, you know, granted, you bring Altuve back. You bring Correa back. You bring Bregman back. They've been there. But, I mean, what George Springer did in the postseason for this team cannot be quantified, and I'm not sure anyone's ready to step into that role.
You know, in the postseason, we've seen some comments about the scandal and all that when they were doing the Zoom calls and stuff. What was the vibe for the players about the scandal? Is this something that they were happy fans weren't there? They didn't really care? How was that kind of looked at?
I mean, I don't think they'll ever say it outright, but they had to have been happy that fans weren't there. I mean, yeah. they got saved. I mean, and look, I don't want that to sound like I'm making light of the pandemic. Obviously, the reason they got saved is awful because of the pandemic. But yeah, I mean, they got off a little bit easy. It will be interesting for me to see two things. You know, one, how fans respond this year when, you know, hopefully we're to a point where we can have fans in the stands in most ballparks, and we're going to travel around, and we'll see how they respond to the Astros. And then on the second accord, I'm really interested to see how fans respond to George Springer, who's going to be in a different, he's going to be in a different uniform. And remember, in the American League East, he's going to go to Yankee Stadium 12 times a year. He's going to go to Fenway Park 12 times a year.
Oh,
you know, two teams that the Astros beat in that 2017 playoffs. So it'll be really interesting to see if a change of jersey, does that change how fans view George Springer? I'm not sure. It'll be a fascinating test case to see.
Yeah. All right, Chandler, we appreciate that insight there on the Houston Astros. Yeah, that's they have a lot of guys, but he felt like kind of one of the faces of that team. It'll be weird to see him in a Blue Jay uniform.
Yeah, it will. I'm not sure about the American West. There's this team up in Seattle.
Yeah, that was last in the West? Or was Texas? Maybe Texas was. No, I think it was you guys.
He kind of poo-pooed on the A's too, didn't he?
A little bit. Yeah, he did. I'm like, wait a minute now. The A's have been really good the last couple of years.
He must be crazy.
That's my boy.
Yes. All right. Well, that's it for us today. You still got your good vibe for tonight?
Yeah.
See the Kings warming up out there on the big screen?
I won't look at that. That might mess my vibe up. I got my vibe. My vibe is my vibe.
Okay. Own it.
I'm on it.
Yes.
Because it was five on it.
Yes. Well, have a good broadcast, Doug. We will see you tomorrow in the studio.
You got it. Go Kings.
All right. That's it for us. For Doug Christie, I'm Jason Ross. Thanks to Jay and Chris back at the studios. We got game night coming your way next. Scott Marsh and the High Flyer, Henry Turner have that. And also the G-Man has the call of the Kings and the Clippers all straight ahead here on Sports 1140 KHDK.